gospel means to and how it is being interpreted in those two very vital areas of the world, India and Pakistan. What is your assessment?
Well, George, that's a very good point of view that you have, that just because the headline of the day may be some other crisis or hot point or the flashpoint on the planet, that does not mean that other sensitive spots have disappeared. As a matter of fact, in this particular instance, we have to be on the lookout for the possibility that the implications for the rest of the world can be pretty grave if things are allowed to get out of hand. The good news so far is that any actions or any reactions that we are seeing are mostly diplomatic, or even if we see somewhat perceived military movement on part of the Russians, it's more of a face-saving effort rather than a real war-mongering effort on anybody's part. So that is the good news as far as the overall impression that the world is getting, and in particular the region that you and I are talking about, India and Pakistan, or even other parts of the world. That's the impression that people tend to have right now.
Well, let me ask about a couple of things. It's a very complicated issue, one would have to believe. Obviously, we are basically defending ethnic Albanians who are largely Muslim,
mm-hmm.
against Serbians who who are not Muslim, who are a form of Christianity.
Right.
Now so that's one issue, and so one would think, okay, if you are a Muslim country, you would be on the side of NATO. And yet I am reading, now this is not, we're going to be talking about, I am reading that the Indonesian government, on the other hand, has opposed the use of force against Yugoslavia in defense of Albanian, ethnic Albanians in Kosovo. What is the position, and they are heavily a Muslim country, what is the position then of Pakistan, another Muslim country, on this issue?
That's a very good question. Now, as far as Bosnia was concerned, George, that was a pretty well known case of Muslims being targeted for persecution or ethnic cleansing by the Serbs. So the feelings were much more black and white, and the issue was a lot larger at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The ethnic Albanians are very unfortunate in that it took the world a lot longer to realize what was going on with them. To their benefit, the fact that the same thing had happened in Bosnia actually enabled the world to take action faster than would otherwise have been the case.
Well, we had the advantage that we were kind of asked to come in by what was, in essence, an independent enclave government. And of course, this is perceived as more of a civil war action, if anything, or a separatist movement. And the government in power, the Yugoslavian government, was basically the Serbian government, and is certainly not asking us to do any mediating here.
Absolutely. But where that leads us then is to an analysis, obviously, 50 years later, of seeing.
Right.
What was happening in Germany 50 years ago was really an internal issue, except, when Germany did go ahead and attack the rest of the world and start a whole world war, and we know what happened then.
Well, the irony is, and you make a very good point as usual, Imam, but here's the irony of it. Germany was saying, well, we've got to go save the Sudetenland ethnic Germans. So, they're in trouble. And so that was kind of the reason. Here we are talking about saving the ethnic Albanians in Kosovo for Albania. I mean, the weird thing is that we're actually taking the other side of the issue. Now, there's always a right and a wrong for why you do things. That just because you do, two sides do something that appears to be the same doesn't mean that it is, obviously. But that's the irony of this, that we're kind of actually coming in from the German position, although for greatly different reasons and with greatly more on our side for reasons for acting, but it's actually concern about ethnic Albanians inside of a country, more at the behest of Albania than anything else.
Well, George, I agree. The irony or the reality of the situation is that no military power or any political nation in history has not conducted the same pogroms and the same violent acts against others that it has not also complained to the world about being the victim of.
I guess that's what I was trying to say.
And yes, you will always find a dual standard in everything we do, and that applies to every country in the world, whether it's Pakistan or the United States.
There are all kinds of subtleties here, and I didn't mean to imply
absolutely not.
That Hitler, and I know you didn't know that, but I just want to make sure everyone understands. Hitler had greatly fewer motives that made any sense compared to what we're witnessing in Albania.
Absolutely. So what I'm saying is that you will always find, somebody will always find a logic to explain what is happening. For example, yes, we can say that what is happening in Yugoslavia is indeed an internal issue, for example. It's a civil war of sorts, and why should the rest of the world be involved? Well, then the rest of the world is involved because of two different reasons. One, obviously, the humanitarian side on that issue, and obviously the follow-up question is, then why don't we go into every single hotspot in the world?
Why aren't we in Rwanda, which is always
exactly
the question.
Or that brings up the other issue of Indonesia, for example, and that could also partially explain the Indonesian government's
position. Yeah.
Exactly, because if that is also a country that is known to have some military presence in areas that it occupied when, for example, Portugal or somebody else may have vacated them, does that mean that if they support this kind of action in one part of the world, are they also implicitly saying it would be okay if the NATO or the West or any other country were to take similar action against them?
So now that brings us back to Pakistan.
Right.
What is their position as they struggle with India over Kashmir? And by the way, I should mention that India, and Pakistan doesn't always get as much publicity, but India's external affairs ministry made a statement about this NATO strike, and they were against it. They said that
no surprises there, George.
They said these strikes were in violation of the UN Charter.
No surprises there, and it's ironic that the Indian minister would mention the United Nations Charter. The interesting thing is the reason there's no surprise there. Yes, religions will play a very active role in fanning hatred and even starting wars, etc. But when countries take sides on political issues, when sovereign states take sides, they do so based upon personal, their own self-interest. And religion does tend to take a back seat in those cases. And this is a good example of that. Again, in this particular case, India, as you have always known, has been a Russian camp country throughout. The U.S. has always dreamt that someday it will be a great, you know, U.S. ally because it's a great economic power and a potential, you know, economic powerhouse in the future. But it will always remain in that Russian sort of camp. Pakistan has always been in the American camp, but it's one-tenth the size of India, so it doesn't get paid the same attention. Now that both countries are nuclear powers and known to be, obviously, that does shift the balance of power a little bit, makes it a little more even. India, if you remember, has two things going here. One is that they are still Russia's top allies. They still depend on Russia for their military hardware and other expertise. And even for their nuclear program, they've had a lot of help from Russia. Pakistan, on the other hand, is not only a Muslim country, which obviously sides with any action against somebody who had aggression against Muslims in the past, but is also a U.S. ally and is also somebody that at a secondary level could see potential benefits to the solution of this problem and seeing those applied to the Kashmir issue where the United Nations charters already exist, so it's not even a unilateral move. It would be almost like India could claim that it's a civil war that the Kashmiris are fighting against the Indian government. Pakistan can say, no, it's an independent state or our state that's been taken over by the Indians, and United Nations charters do exist, hence NATO or somebody else should come in. So it's both religion and politics for Pakistan, and for the Indians, the stance is based on their relationship with Russia and seeing themselves as potential victims of the next such action.
Which is why I thought this would be an interesting discussion to talk about India and Pakistan, which I don't hear the media even being concerned with. And maybe, ultimately, this thing blows away and it will be irrelevant to talk about other countries that are pretty much outside of the immediate circle of danger in the Balkans. But what you are bringing up is the interesting thing here, and how convoluted all of this gets.
Absolutely.
Just to simplify it, you've got India and Pakistan at odds and fighting, virtually fighting over that region known as Kashmir, which is heavily, if I'm not mistaken, you've told us the population of which is heavily Muslim. Right?
Absolutely.
And would, if given a chance to vote on the issue, probably vote to
join Pakistan
if it didn't vote for some kind of independence. But India lays claim to it. India owns it. And I'm not trying to take sides here, but I am saying that the issue would then be for India, just from the big picture standpoint, if we side with NATO, we would be opening ourselves up to something later that NATO or whoever else would make this, the United Nations or anyone else would say, wait a minute, Kosovo separatists, you sided, you said they had the right to do X, Y, and Z against Yugoslavia, now Kashmiris want to do it, how come you say something else? So that's their concern, among other things.
Actually, I think we owe your listeners and the audience an apology, considering that you are the host and I am supposed to help clarify things. I think we are doing more to confound the readers with just how convoluted the situation is.
Well, that's good, though. I like that. I know where you're coming from on that, but I mean, and I am trying to just, you know, take it one step at a time because I want to make sure that I understand it, because if I understand it, I figure the listeners are getting it.
Probably better than you and I are.
That's how complicated this is. Now, meanwhile, Pakistan on the other side has exactly the opposite situation. Of course, India also has no particular, am I correct, no particular affection for Muslims. I mean, as a big picture entity, they've been in conflict with Muslims through much of their history.
Exactly. India is a secular state by its charter, mm-hmm. but the fact that 80% of its population is, let's say, Hindu,
right.
makes it a very Hindu country with a secular charter, much like the United States has a Christian population, but is a secular state.
Exactly. And the fact is that Hindus are no more likely to be at odds with other religions than anyone else. It's just that they're the dominant religion. They fight the Sikhs and the Hindus fight.
Exactly. And the 20% or so minority that exists in India of Muslims is actually, ironically, bigger than the population of Pakistan.
I see.
So even though the Muslims may be considered the victims of a big majority, the Hindu majority, but the fact is there are more Muslims in India, so it's almost like India is the larger Muslim country in sheer numbers. But just to go back to the 30,000-foot view, or even higher in this case, we have things happening in Kosovo and all these countries. The implications are immense. It even starts moving from there towards the Pakistan-India region. And the United States is concerned as much about, it's all about self-interest, as we discussed, but it's also about ensuring stability. And conflicts in those regions have tended, like in the Kosovo region or in those European regions, have tended to lead to much bigger problems for the whole world, as we have seen twice before, and sure, actually many more times, but twice on a very significant level. So yes, there is an incentive both to prevent ethnic cleansing of any kind from taking place, two, to ensure stability in that region, which doesn't spill over into other smaller, less stable countries like Macedonia, etc.
Sure.
Now, anything that happens there can have an implication for Greece and Turkey, for example, because of both the relationships, the historical links, and that's where you get into this sort of tricky Muslim-Christian issue again.
Well, that was the question I wanted to ask you about, where we're kind of heading in there with Turkey, which is an amazingly complicated issue in that region that we're now kind of moving towards.
So you have a country like Turkey, which has made a great deal of effort to westernize itself, to align itself with European interests, and has been spurned time and again, giving lots of emotion, giving rise to a lot of emotion in the Muslim majority population, saying we have almost like given up our identity to be Europe-like, yet we keep getting spurned, whereas Eastern European countries, previously enemies, are allowed to join the right organizations, etc. Now, that can cause complications within Turkey. Now, if that happens, Turkey is right next to Iran, which is already a fundamentalist Muslim state.
Right.
And you are thereby enabling the right wing in Turkey to become more active. If that starts happening, Iran's influence is much higher then. Countries like Pakistan, which have also clamored for justice and saving the Muslims in Bosnia, etc., will also then find themselves, now, especially now that they are nuclear powers, will find nobody's really looking out for our interests. And if nobody's going to help us solve the Kashmir problem, maybe we need to take action on our own. So everything has the potential of becoming a flashpoint and also triggering something like a flash domino effect, as I might call it.
Which is a very good defense for why NATO is moving here and why it did not why the Western powers or the developed countries did not find it necessary or advisable necessarily to move into, say, Rwanda, where probably, arguably, the atrocities were worse. But the ability for it to flash into world conflict is much less likely. And here's something. You mentioned Turkey. This seems to me a very interesting discussion. Turkey is a member of NATO.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey is Muslim.
And it has been a staging ground for a lot of action in Iraq, for example.
Exactly. But on the other hand, Turkey and Syria and Iraq and Iran all have one thing in common. They kind of have, if you draw a little circle around their edges, they all have this heavy Kurdish area.
Absolutely.
That has constantly been fighting for separatism.
Absolutely.
And they are all very, very sensitive about it, not the least of which would be the Turks. They are very sensitive about any separatist movement of the Kurds.
Right.
And so, if they're really in a funny moment here. If they, their sympathies, their Muslim sympathies are with the Kosovars.
Right.
Their NATO agreement is with the NATO forces, but their fears about separatism and the whole, any kind of a separatist movement and world impression and impact and so on would have to lie with Milosevic.
And that, George, brings us back to the irony of the situation that NATO troops, NATO planes can be staged out of Turkey to bomb Iraq, supposedly to defend the Kurdish population,
mm-hmm.
whereas Turkey, the NATO ally, which is allowing the planes to take off, also has been doing the same thing with the Kurdish population.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yes, you know, it will always be about self-interest, hypocrisy based on self-interest, and making decisions based on political expediency. One can only hope that, yes, that is human nature, and that is the nature of the beast that is the sovereign state or the religious state or the social state mm-hmm. that exists in today's juncture in history. But we have to remember that the world will never be a perfectly just place. There will always be this right. dual standard and hypocrisy. One can only hope is that the politically expedient things that keep getting done lead to slightly better situations at the end of the exercise every time. So yes, we will have a lot of injustices done between now and the next 100 years, but hopefully by the next 100 years, despite these dual standards, we will have come to a situation where the planet overall will have done away with a lot of the trouble spots or reached resolution on issues like Kashmir or Kosovo or Kurdistan or what have you.
But once the world acts in this way, it makes a certain kind of a statement. That statement rings in its ears for a long time, and so I suspect this has long-term implications because of the way we have handled it. And I'm not debating against that we handled it incorrectly. I'm just saying that the move that we make here is important as we go forward talking about Kashmir, as we go forward talking about the Kurdish independence, and talking in various other parts of the world. So this is going to have potentially, maybe not marquee in the news, but behind the scenes in terms of the discussions that go on all the time in the world, it's going to have impact.
I agree, George. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that at present, even though it's there's a lot of U.S. involvement in this, and it's NATO's action throughout, keep in mind that it's still a very much like a monitoring role. It's almost like, when you had when you were in school and, somebody would have to act as class monitor and just
mm-hmm.
Once in a while, like, knock the duster on the table and make so that people would stay in place. It would be a whole different thing if the U.S. had committed 100,000 troops and,
yeah.
and there was battle going, raging in the wars and in the streets of Kosovo or Belgrade or somewhere like that. That's a whole different thing. So what I am hoping that we get out of this whole situation is that the loss of one or two aircraft notwithstanding, that generally just enough of a peace war-making sound, so war-making for the sake of peace, enough of that sound will help us achieve a lot more in the next 10 years than has been achieved in the last 50.
And, of course, a lot of this has to do with how quickly this is resolved and how it's resolved, so on and so forth, but it has tremendous implications beyond the Balkans and beyond even what might be widely discussed in the media, however it is resolved and however quickly. That's the thing that I knew was the case, and that's why I felt that it was important for us to talk. I knew you'd have a lot of interesting insights about other parts of the world besides Kosovo, Macedonia, the Balkans generally, and NATO. And the United States. It's very, very interesting, as always, Imran, and thank you very much for joining us today.
The pleasure is mine, and we will speak again.
All right, so thank you. Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, and of course a well-known media